Howdy, folks, and welcome to Moose Podcast, number 498, Your Spring Gear Questions 2026, episode 498. We're getting up there. I got something special for you for number 500 coming up in a couple weeks. Tell your friends, come on by. Trust you folks are doing well. Spring is well underway here. At the ranch, we've got Sharon's favorite friends back, the Evening Grow Speaks. I'm right now looking at a couple pairs down at Mega. I just spooked a Lazuli bunting off the seed feeder, filling it up. Yep, they are here. Both our red-breasted and pygmy nuthatches are on eggs. Wow. It's cranking already. It's amazing. I hope you're enjoying spring where you happen to be. It's kind of interesting. It's spring, but this morning it was 21 degrees when I took Maggie out. So, brr, even had our first Hummer. This episode of the Moose Podcast is being brought to you again by Adobe Podcast Beta, doing its AI voice voodoo, whatever it do, I hope well. It also creates a transcript, which you can find there on the website. There's a blog post dedicated to the podcast. There's also an archives there, okay, that you might want to check out. You can also listen to podcasts, all your favorite spots, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, YouTube. Some of those have the transcripts. Some of them don't. Hey, I'm here. If you need help, you can leave comments, ask questions, ask lots of questions. Spotify, YouTube. I try to help you guys. I'm the one doing the answering, not AI. You can always tell it's me because there's going to be grammar and spelling errors. That's how you know it's me. And I'm here to help any way I can. Now, remember that you can head to moosepeterson.com. The very bottom right corner of the landing page, you'll find the my doohickey list, doodads list to be exact. Things that are not technically photographic that you might want to add to your gear locker, desk, workflow, which includes books that I recommend as well as other stuff. It's there. I constantly update it or add to it, I should say. Hopefully it helps. So that's on the landing page for moosepeterson.com, bottom of the page on the right, doodad list. Not really a lot happening this past week in the old photographic industry. Yeah, some of the awards are out there, and every manufacturer seems to pick up a couple. Nikon, of course, got a couple as well, well-deserved. So that's very cool. I got all sorts of comments from last week's podcast, To the Moon and Beyond. Yeah, that Artemis mission really seemed to ignite a lot of creatives. I think that's just so way cool. What photography does and brings people together still is just a blessing and a miracle and amazing. So I appreciate all your comments and feedback. One of you asked about my dental thing. It's going well. Blurps, slurps, gerps, this podcast are all on me, not on any affliction I might have with my teeth. So this week, I volunteer at the Museum of Mountain Flying, which is a museum. It's a great place. It's the home of Miss Montana, the A-26 Fire Eater, and a number of other aircraft, and some really great people. And this last weekend was the volunteer bring up to speed meeting because it was closed during the wintertime. And, I thought I should brush up on some of my Miss Montana history. So the book recommendation I have is one that I've read before. I don't think I have mentioned it here on the podcast. I couldn't find any in my records. The title of the book is Every Reason to Fail: The Unlikely Story of Miss Montana and the D-Day Squadron by Brian Douglas, a really nice guy. I really enjoy Brian. Anyway, it's not just a book about a plane. It's full of a lot of history, a lot of how, as the title says, Every Reason to Fail. That's kind of the title of the book. And the reason why I'm mentioning it is because it's a page burner as far as I'm concerned. It's also for photographers. If you apply probably every 10th paragraph, it would apply to your photography. And so many reasons. And if you think about the title, Every Reason to Fail, that could sum up all of our photography efforts, right? But yet, we don't. And when we do, we actually end up becoming a winner in the end. Because why? Because we learn from our mistakes. So it's a great read. Yeah, there'll be a link on the blog post, also in the doodad list, Every Reason to Fail by Brian Douglas. Check it out. You will enjoy it. I want to thank my good friends at Bedford Camera, bedfords.com, for sponsoring the Moose Podcast. These guys, they're there for all of us. You know, you've got like in July, they have their PhotoCon that is a really great event with all the manufacturers and all the classes and speakers and photo walks. You have that great stuff. And if you sign up with your phone number, one, they don't sell that information. What they do is they use it to tell you about specials, especially their pop-up sales specials, which I think are just killer. And you get a text and you have basically about at least of the last 3 or 4 months, you got about 48 hours after they send you the text to take advantage of the pop-up sale. And it's a marvelous way to spend money. I mean, a marvelous way to save money. Oh, 40 and slip. These guys, Bedford's Camera, they've got the gear, the prices, they got the people, they got the knowledge, and they've got the passion and want to help you and your photography. Most of those folks there are photographers. They all have their own, like all of us, their little niches. You talk to them, they'll become good friends. Whether you go to the store, give them a call, click on the link. Hey, bedfords.com, you guys rock, and thanks so much for sponsoring the Moose Podcast. Well, I kind of need to get into these questions. I've got, six sum up the questions from the first quarter. Yeah, I keep a list, and I check it twice, and those who are naughty, yeah, I don't answer your questions. But those of you who are nice, yeah, let's go at it. The first one from Jeannie, I think, was really cool. She said, how do you have time to not only read all of those books, but to find them in the first place? Jeannie, that's a great question. Starts off with, I am inquisitive, and in that inquisitiveness, I tend to go out and find answers, and often those answers are in books. And then I don't judge a book by the cover. I kind of do a little, you know, most books these days, especially on the web, you can read a little bit of an excerpt from it, and I check those out. That's the first way. Number two, I have a lot of like-minded friends who read books who often we either A, pass books around physically amongst ourselves, and it's interesting, none of us are e-readers. We're all like an actual hard copy or soft book in our hands that we pass those along. So sometimes I get books that are literally a bit dog-eared, but that's okay. And that's really common. And the last way is I tend to listen to a number of things, be it interviews, podcasts, NPR, what have you. And TED Talks, should mention that as well. And often that is the genesis of books I get. The fact the next week's podcast, I have a book that I'm going to recommend that I'm just about done with. Really good read that came from a TED Talk. So, Jeannie, great question. Hope that answers that question. I had lots and lots and lots of people ask this question. Jim had a great way of putting it together. He says, I'm tired of tariffs. I'm tired of new gear. But like every photographer, I love what's latest and greatest. He said, are the version 2 of the 24-70 Z lens and the Z7200-28-2 really worth the extra dollars? I've read a number of things on the web. Don't know who to trust. Help. Jim. Big smiley face. Jim, are they worth the dollars? The honest answer is that you might not like, but it's truly up to your photography, which in large part you control, right? For example, let's talk about the 24-70 f/2.8 and the version 2. If you're not really into video and you don't really have to worry about travel weight, as in a heavy thing on your shoulder or in your back and having to put it in the overhead, to be honest with you, I probably would stick with the original 24-70 2.8 because it is physically heavier, okay? It has a zoom, and the lens expands and contracts as you zoom, and it's physically taller. And those attributes, to me, right off the bat, it was always a pain in the arse, for example, to put it in a think tank or one of my photo packs because it's just actually bigger in diameter, bigger shade. It just didn't fit the same basic cube form as, for example, the version 2, which slips right into a cube hole without any modifications easily. It's the version 2 is not as tall, so you don't have to worry about the depth of your bag. It's physically lighter, which if you're putting something in the overhead or on your back, makes a difference. So for the 24-70, if you don't need that criteria, then no, it's not worth the dollars. Now on the 70-200-28, kind of the same deal, but not quite the same deal. The 70-200-28, the original, which is a really great lens, versus the version 2, which also is a really great lens. You know, you've lost over 30% of the physical weight. And since so many of us shoot the 7200 handheld, that weight loss, you feel it when you're hand-holding, especially for an hour or two. It makes a huge difference. As far as I'm concerned, for doing air-to-air work, it's just a lifesaver. Now, I think your question, Jim, as well as most of them, had to do with optical performance. I'll be honest with you. So far, I haven't read anything on the web that I think is honest or sincere, because most optical performance problems come from the shooter, not the gear. That's been my experience for decades, and I think it's still true. Yeah, I know. I hear people go, I lock the tripod down shooting from my deck, and I'm like, okay, so you've got a deck that vibrates. It goes right up that tripod that you've locked down tight. What do you think is going to happen to the images you're testing? I mean, so you got to be honest with you, is the 7200-2 sharper than the original? Yeah, it might be on a chart, but in the actuality, no. It's the fun factor, the comfort factor, I think, that makes the 7200-2 worth the extra dollars. But I appreciate all your questions about that, guys. I still recommend when you're looking and thinking about new gear, rent it before you buy it. You judge for your own self, for your own photography, if it's worth the money. You'll save yourself money in the long run. Dorothy had, I think, one of the best questions. It's very current and relative. She said, I'm looking for a new body. Should I buy the Z8, the Z9, or the D5? Dorothy and many others, I wonder why you're asking about the D5 all of a sudden. Huh, I wonder. Yeah, you know, Artemis, pretty darn cool. You know, I hear through the rumor mill, there's over 30 of those D5s in the NASA locker. So, you know, there's a reason why they have that. And just for, you know, giggle's sake, you realize that the D6, which is you can buy brand new from your dealer, like Bedford's, Bedfords.com, has the exact same sensor as the D5. Well, Dorothy, here's my honest opinion. If you can hold the weight of the Z9 and shoot for an hour and not feel like you got arm fatigue, that's the camera to go with. If you can't, go with the Z8. And personally, I wouldn't recommend the D5 because the D5, great camera. Okay. I kept my original one. It's in my Nikon collection, but the D5 is going to depend on what? F mount lenses. And as far as I am concerned, the Z mount lenses, hands down, are a better lens for the buck for shooting pleasure and fun over the F mount. So that's what I'd recommend, Dorothy. Lewis listened to an old podcast, and he and a few other people asked about, and to sum them up, is RAID worth it? In other words, R-A-I-D. They're talking about computer storage. Is it worth it? You know what, Lewis? I'll be honest with you. I still don't know the answer to that. Now, I've heard all sorts of people talk about the redundancy, blah, blah, blah. First of all, RAID is not a substitute for a backup. So you have to have a backup for your RAID. And I have found that out the hard way and, in this case, the easy way. I mentioned about how one of the drives of my RAID had failed. The process, I just now literally, during this recording of the podcast, the message pulled up on my computer that I was ready to go. So that's basically 3.5 months of dealing with one drive going out. But it's not as simple as just taking a drive out and telling the software to validate and to sync, and away you go. It's not that clean and simple. So, you got the old school where you don't have a RAID system. To be honest with you, since you have to do a backup anyway, and the RAID redundancy, and after all the time and blah, 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 I got to be honest with you. I know I'll get some people saying I'm wrong, but I'm not sure a RAID is worth it, Lewis, to be honest with you. Because to me, it's all about, one, safe protecting your images, and two, time. And if you're making a backup anyway, what difference does it make how your original, if it's on a RAID or not? You've got a backup. And the backup's not going to be a RAID. I mean, so, Lewis, I don't have a clean-cut answer for everybody. I just tell you for myself, after my experience, I just, you know, this is the fourth time, I've had issues with a RAID, and it's been a time sink, and I just hate that. So, Lewis, that's my honest opinion. So it's been interesting questions the last, I'm going to say, about 2, maybe 3 weeks. Mark sums it up. Simple. What are my raw processor options? Help, exclamation point, excuse me. Mark, I got to tell you, I don't know what your options are for the very simple reason. I just used one, and I haven't changed from that one for eons. I use Adobe Camera Raw, ACR, for so many reasons. First, I like the Adobe ecosystem. I just do. And I've heard all these complaints about, you know, the subscription model, blah, blah, blah. I'm old enough to remember where every 6 months I would give them $600 and get a box, either, you know, from FedEx or UPS. And I have all these discs I have to load and blah, blah, blah. And you had updates twice a year, not twice a week sometimes. So, yeah, I got to pay something every month. Same with my phone bill, my internet, my television. You know, it's the model. It works. And for me, Adobe Camera Raw really works. It is the thing that I can crank through the air-to-air I did. 2 weeks ago now, had 18,000 images from that air-to-air shoot, those 7 total aircraft photo missions. I was between Photo Mechanic, which I have linked to Adobe Camera Raw, and Adobe Camera Raw, I had all those prints out. They're gone. I got them filed, organized, finished, printed, done. And that speed, there's just no way to, you know, the time that's saved, there's just no dollar value on that. So for Mark, for me, for raw processor options, it's just one, Adobe Camera Raw. It just works. I'm going to finish up with Gene's question, which I was taken aback by, because most people don't think of me as a landscape photographer. I do them. I love them. They're just when the moment hits me and the landscape touches my heart, I click. So Gene's question was real simple. What is the best landscape lens? Well, as soon as you say the word best, I instantly start to like hesitate, lock up, stutter, because I don't know if there is one best. And that's because I've shot everything from fisheye, 8 to 15, so from 8 millimeter to 600 millimeter landscapes, and I just love those images throughout the entire focal length. What I can tell you though, that might help you, and it's what I recommend most people, Gene, is first, gotta remember I'm always shooting, I should say always, 99% of the time, I'm shooting my landscapes with the lens wide open. So that's 2.8 or F4. Or with the 180 to 600, 5.6 or 6.3, but so I'm always wide open. But what I recommend is you've got to kind of like understand how you see and how you then translate that to the viewfinder. Because we see with this 170 degrees of horizontal, you know, vision, and that's 170, right? That's just a little bit short of a full frame fisheye, which is 180. We can see all that. But when we actually narrow down what we think is the landscape photograph into that viewfinder, all of a sudden that wide peripheral vision, right, comes down to a little tunnel. So in that process, this is my word of advice. This is what I do. Doesn't always work. Ask people who shoot with me. I often will go out with one lens thinking about this and change it. But it's just simple. If you get out of your vehicle or you stand in the scene and you move your head physically around, up and down, left and right, you're probably going to want a 14 to 24. Now, if you hold your head still but move your eyes around to take in the landscape, probably a 24 to 70. And then as you start looking further into the scene and narrow it down mentally, that's when I think you're going to get probably, you know, 135, 200 millimeters and longer. Now, keep in mind, I really don't want to crop and post. Excuse me. I mean, I know magazine editors are going to crop my images anyway, but I don't do it in post. So I do it all at camera by either zooming my feet or zooming the lens. But to define the best landscape lens, yeah, I'm afraid, Gene, I'm not the one that's going to be able to tell you that. You are for your own photography. And that's what this It's what this podcast and all this information is about, for you to make the decisions that make the best choices for your gear, for your shooting, so you can follow your passion and put that all in the pixels, then bring it back and share it with me and everybody else. That is the answer to your question, is what does that best is going to be the best landscape lens for you. Well, I appreciate you guys spending time with me. You guys get out there and shoot. And remember to make every click your story.